Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network. I'm Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University, a company focused on the training and development of coaches, kickers, punters, and snappers. The Super Bowl is here and you can join the action at betonline.ag. Tampa Bay is the first team in history to play for the Super Bowl on their home field. The Buccaneers are currently a 3.5-point underdog in this Sunday's matchup against the defending world champion Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are looking to win back-to-back titles for the first time in almost two decades. BetOnline has hundreds of props in the game, including game MVP, margin of victory, and even the length of the national anthem. Always available online or your mobile device, visit betonline.ag today. BetOnline, your sports online experts. Episode 20 of the podcast welcomes Matt Beardall, current NFL free agent and former long snapper for Marshall University. A native of Merritt Island, Florida, Beardall was the long snapper for his hometown Mustangs, and in his senior season, he was selected the Class 5A All-State Honorable Mention. This helped to catch the attention of Marshall University, where Beardall would eventually commit and have one of the best long snapping careers in Thundering Herd history. Some highlights from his time at Marshall are: he started in 48 consecutive games for the Herd. He earned two-time Conference USA All-Conference first team in the 2018 and 2019 seasons. He was also named Conference USA All-Freshman team, an award that was only given to five specialists in the conference. This is really impressive stuff, Matt. You know, I've been excited to catch up with you and just keep up with you throughout the 9 years I've known you. And I'm excited to talk to you today about, you know, how you got to this point and your plans moving forward. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be on here. I'm pumped up to chat with you a little bit, talk some ball, talk Marshall, and talk whatever. I'm super pumped to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I mean, this is a rare experience where I get to talk to someone that I really do have a personal relationship with. I know your father, I know your brother, I've met your mom. Like, I've seen you grow up, man. I've seen you go through your entire high school career and your entire college career, and now entering the free agency market, which we're going to talk about at length today. But, you know, you've been a part of my year-round training program in Daytona Beach for the last 9 years. And to this day, in your off seasons, you're a regular. You know, when you were at Marshall and you were home for, I don't know, a weekend, it was almost a priority of you to come out on a Sunday and come back to these Fourth Down U trainings and give back and train with my younger athletes. And I'm a firm believer that that's why we've had such success, is because these kids, they see something that is attainable. You know, it's a dream to these high school kids, but then when they get to work with guys like you that, you know, have lived their dream and they actually trained and developed in the same environment, I think it makes it seem attainable, you know? So 100%. I thank you so much for that.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to me to come back, and like, kids will ask you, what's it like playing for college? And it's like, I'm a 6'1", 225 pound guy, was 190 pounds soaking wet when I went there. And it's like, you don't have to be the special 6'5", 255 pound guy. There's a lot of normal guys out there playing college football that has a special trait. If it's a quarterback, kicker, punter, it doesn't matter what it is. It's, if you can play football at your position, they'll take you. Size doesn't really matter to an extent, of course, but it's just like, especially being a specialist,
it's a skill. Like, it's what you're saying is, yes, there are measurables that are favorable, but in the end, I mean, most of my kids, I'll be honest, look at Cairo Santos, look at you. My guys are not prototypes physically usually, but they're exceptional in the skill set, which makes them appealing at all levels. I mean, you're trying to play on Sundays now because you, in fact, do have enough skill. I think the disconnect right now, and you're going to explain more about it, is, you know, you've got to control what you can and maybe get a little bit stronger here, maybe polish up footwork in this facet of the game. But, you know, I wanted to touch on that. You're the first person to assist a young guy, because I think you do know that teaching is also learning. I think that the guys in college need to realize, if they want to play on Sunday, go help a younger kid in high school.
I'll pick up one to two things every single time. Doesn't matter if it's with you or if it's this kid from Merritt Island that's a freshman that's 5'7", 130 pounds, trying to teach them how to snap, I'd still learn something new, different angles, different videos, different stuff I can even help myself will help make me better as teaching someone.
Yeah, I think that teaching, like I said, is learning, of course. But I think most importantly, I think teaching allows us to take ownership of our learning, you know, because if you can deliver it and you can instruct it and you can talk about why it's good and here's the bad, you own it. You own mm-hmm. that material. You're not reliant on somebody else for at least that particular thing you're teaching. And I think that that is an invaluable thing, because the whole mindset that I have is I want to coach my players so I can empower them enough to be independent enough to be across the world in the middle of a season and make corrections.
Yeah, no, you have to be able to make corrections mid-season, because going through a 15-week season, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be pretty all 15 weeks. Maybe the first week of camp feeling really good, but something's always going to come up, even if it's like a little strain of an injury to where coaches are switching schemes a little bit. You just got to be able to adapt and figure out, be able to teach yourself and figure out watching film on what you are doing wrong, because it's just such – there's no room for error. You have to be perfect 100% of the time, every single time. And you got to be able to correct little things here and there on the fly and tell yourself why you're doing this. Let's do this now to fix it.
I couldn't agree more. And there's not a worse feeling than being in the middle of a season and being in a rut, if you will, you know, a funk that you know that you have control of, you just don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. You don't know where to, I mean, cause you and you have the energy and you have the wherewithal that it needs to be addressed, but you don't know how to fix it. I've been there before and it's not a good feeling. And I'm sure you've been lost at certain points in your career. And that's what I want to do my best to help avoid at all cost. So that being said, I wanted to shift the focus to you and start kind of when it started. I want you to give us your background in youth sports, maybe activities that you participated in growing up. I don't care if it was the YMCA, but I want it to be outside of football. I don't really care about your Pop Warner, if there was one experience. I want you to talk about, maybe looking back now, what were the things I did? And it could have been fishing, right? Because it's such a mm-hmm. precise thing to cast in a mangrove. What was it that helped Matt Beardall indirectly become a good long snapper?
I think it was, honestly, I played baseball since I was 5 years old, growing up all until high school. And that was my primary sport. I wanted to play in the MLB. That was the dream growing up. Of course, you'd watch football on Saturdays and Sundays, but I didn't play any competitively football until eighth grade. That was the first time I ever played. And it was playing baseball. And I don't know, just little things I can take from playing baseball, playing travel baseball, playing seven games in 1 week. And it was literally some of the best times of my life playing that stuff. And my dad was coaching and my brother was playing, and we had 13 games in 1 week, and my mom would be in Orlando, my dad would be in Daytona at baseball tournaments. And then it's even fishing, just being super precise on the little things. I think the little things make the biggest difference in life and on the football field. I don't know, I've always been super laid back, never, I'm hard on myself, but it's, I don't let a lot of things affect me. And that's kind of where baseball is. If you mess up a hit, you strike out, it's always on to the next one. You're going to have three more attempts in a baseball game to hit, and you can't strike out all four times. I mean, it's possible, but you just got to be mentally strong. And mentally is definitely going through a football season is where you have to be on top of your game every single day. It's just super, super important.
Yeah, I always ask people a question kind of like that, you know, what is your youth background? Because none of us kicked field goals at seven, mm-hmm. but I was doing things. You were doing things. Everyone I've talked to on the show, every single one of them had done things. They were in an organized team setting or independent sport like tennis, but they were all doing something. And I think what I'm learning through the show is that we all had to, or learned indirectly, a way to compete, you know, a way to mm-hmm. assess what we're doing, what our competitors are doing. If we're not doing it as well as them, how do we do it better? I think it's great. I think it's awesome to know that there really isn't a streamlined approach here. You know, these kids at 7, 8, 9 can do whatever they want as long as they're competing, as long as they're focusing on a skill set that takes precision, it takes repetition, it takes minimizing variables, the things we talk about all the time in snapping and kicking and punting. I think that we're doing a lot of things indirectly that are helping prepare us to be all sorts of shapes and sizes, you know, and do it well.
I agree 100%. And I would even think playing lacrosse in high school helped me out in so many different ways, because I went out there the first day of lacrosse tryouts, never picked up a lacrosse stick. I was tired of playing baseball and I was like, I want to play this. And it made me had to be more physical, more aggressive, and 100% helped me on the football field. And plus I was one of the worst players out there too. And it was like, never really sucked at anything before. And I sucked at lacrosse. It took me till like my junior year to get really, really good. But I would just play defense on lacrosse and got a bunch of penalties, but it was just really, really fun. And was always learning something new every day. And that's kind of how I took going into college with snapping. It was like, I just want to be able to take in something new about me, about a different scheme, something new, even about football. If I'm watching practice, see a DB do this, be like, huh, never understood why DBs did that. And it makes sense now.
Yeah, no. And you know, we'll kind of fast forward through the obvious, you know, you prioritize snapping, most especially you prioritize your training. You sought good coaching. You know, we can talk about Coach Lippos, and you've seen some great people. You've been out to Zahner, but you trained smart and training was a priority. And I think that is the result of people like is what happens. It's when I get to talk to Matt Beardall and say, wow, let's talk about your 48 consecutive career starts. Let's talk about what an all-conference performer means. Let's talk about being a preseason Phil Steele All-American. These things are only earned through monotonous, boring, tedious, laborious work. Work, 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 work. Boring, right? No one cares but you. And we're going to talk later about what I think is the disconnect, but I want to talk about this first. Let's go to your first year at Marshall, your first year in college, okay?
Okay.
Well, I read up on you last night, and I didn't know the exact time, but I did read last night that the fourth game of your freshman season was your debut. You were on the road against Pittsburgh, and you were forced into duty. I want you to explain what happened in that Pittsburgh game, right? Like, what happened? I mean, was it an injury to the starting guy? And what do you credit in never looking back? Because it sounds like you secured that job after that day and until you graduated.
So it was Wednesday of the game week. Tuesday, Wednesdays are huge work days in college. Those are everything's getting installed, game plans going in. And the snapper on Tuesday that was ahead of me, he was a redshirt freshman. He had a pretty rough day at practice. And one of the special teams coaches said something to him he didn't really like, and he left practice. And I was like, huh, this is weird. Never really thought twice about it. What I was like, I'm literally in week four of my career thinking, huh, maybe they just leave practice if they get upset. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out the whole college thing. And I get a call like 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning from Doc Holliday. My phone's ringing. I'm like, holy smokes, this is not good at all. Like, there's no reason why he should be calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning. I hardly thought he knew my name. He was like, need you in my office in 10 minutes. And I walk in and Coach Goble was there. He was like, Zach's no longer with us. You're our guy. Be ready to snap a lot today in practice, snap a lot Thursday, and you're coming to Pittsburgh and playing. I'm like, holy smokes. And I'm like, all right, that's I took it serious before then, but it was like, all right, I really need to get in this film room and see what I'm getting myself into. And it was just crazy. And it was, I have to credit Corey Vedvik a lot, being a mentor for me for my first 2 years while he was there. He just kind of would walk me through what a game week looked like. And it was, we were pretty much fast tracking everything. It was 3 days before the game and got on the bus, headed to Pittsburgh, walking in Heinz Field that Friday night. I'm just kind of looking up. It was almost surreal. Like, I called my mom and dad Wednesday morning. I usually would talk to both of them after practice at nighttime. So it was kind of out of the blue for me calling in the morning. I was like, hey, is any way you guys can make it up to Pittsburgh this morning? Because they weren't planning on going since I was just going to redshirt that year. I was still traveling, but they weren't coming to the game. And they were like, why? I was like, well, I'm the guy now, I'm playing. And they're like, all right, we'll book a plane ticket. And sure enough, they were there Friday afternoon at the hotel when we pulled up. And it was super, super cool. And it was almost like a dream come true. It really was like a dream come true.
Yeah. I mean, It just makes me, you can't see me right now, but for the audience, you know, I love hearing stuff like that because, you know, I don't know all of your stories and I didn't know that one at all. You know, I didn't know really what transpired, your communication in the morning. I just think that's so neat. But what I will say is this, as you told me that story, I was imagining the conversation in the coaches meeting. I don't know if it was all of them, the full staff, or if it was two or three, but I do imagine the head coach and at least the special teams coordinator were sitting there, and there probably wasn't much, I don't know, how do you say it? They probably weren't very concerned with their next guy because they probably said, well, Matt Beardall, he's done nothing but everything well so far. He's the first to be here, last to leave. He really takes advantage of everything. I like that about you is you don't just take the football field seriously. You take every component from the film room to, I'm sure you're a good training treatment guy because 48 consecutive starts, people don't realize that you cover and you have to protect, and things happen in the trenches. Even if you're not engaging in the contact that occurs, like it most often occurs by someone falling behind you or around you or next to you. So I'll say this, I have seen firsthand that you know how to work. I think that you're a process person. You epitomize what a process person is. You're patient with your progress too. You're not scared of the stagnant times. Because at your level, you're going to have them. You're going to sit in the plateau for a while, and I'm honestly going to be okay with staying at this level, at this current level I'm at right now. And I think some young guys think that every day I should be getting better. And I think that that's really misleading because all they're seeing is the kids put a 60-yard field goal. They may have hit 50 to get one, and that's what they're seeing. They're seeing the one. They're seeing the highlight reel. But I've enjoyed watching you through this journey. I think that you've done it because you compartmentalize. You look at components of your art or your snap. You break it down to the footwork. You then focus on the hands. You then think about weight distribution. You know, you do all the things that I do in kicking and punting that I coach. And I really appreciate that because I think it models good behavior for the younger guys. I want you to share with our listeners what a typical week for you looks like. I know you're working right now, but I was talking more importantly, like if you're in season, what would a typical Matt Beardall work week look like if it was like an ideal week? You had a full week to prepare and you had complete control over how you structured that week.
So games on Saturday and Sunday starts the new week, and would lift, recover, start treatment probably at noon on Sunday. Obviously kind of eat pretty good breakfast Sunday morning and go in for treatment, do the lift with the team. And then after the lift, all the specialists, we would watch the film. We wouldn't really critique each other much. We kind of just would refresh our minds with the game, take a couple notes. And we would always try to finish up Sunday afternoon about 4. And then we would really take a break from football then, kind of just clear our minds, let everything kind of get away from the game because practice wasn't until Monday night at 7. So we kind of just tried to get a full day away because Sundays were our off days too, and get a full day away, but would still go in Monday mornings, get treatment. Monday was a big school day in college, and would start watching some film on the iPad about Monday afternoon once I was finishing up with school on the opponent. And I would always watch the punt return team, two guys in the A gap, and then the field goal block team, the two or three guys in the A gap. And I would just kind of watch them throughout the week. But I would also watch them play if they were a starter somewhere else. I'd watch them how they played on defense or offense, just kind of figure out, try to feel them out, see what they were like, because I didn't want that first snap. I didn't never like being surprised playing football. So Mondays, we didn't snap or kick at Marshall. Doc wanted that as a rest day. So I would get 2 full days after a game. And then Tuesday, it was lifting, treatment, school, and then practice. And that was – Tuesdays were the heaviest work days. It was going 80 snaps on a Tuesday, just really trying to figure everything out, work everything out, and would spend a ton of time on punt stuff too on Tuesday. So Tuesday was a big punt day. And then Wednesdays would still be treatment. We'd lift again and really work on with the situational field goal stuff with the holder and kicker. And I would try to be right around 60 snaps on a Wednesday. Then a Thursday, you're back out of the pads and it was definitely a lighter day, and that would be a 40 snap day, and kind of just tying any loose ends up, really watching 2 hours of film with the punter and the holder and the kicker, just never like being surprised. And then Fridays was an off day. Would definitely try to get, when we were travel, watch a movie on the plane. Wasn't a big film guy on the plane. Just kind of like separating myself from football, just kind of taking in everything too while I can. It's Saturday morning, it's ready to go. It's treatment in the morning and time to play some football on Saturday afternoon.
I love it. We talked about this the last episode, not about snapping, but about punting and how the athlete knew almost to the rep what the expectation for the day was. So counting yours, it's 80, 60, 40. You know, and add in, sprinkle in, give or take, you're definitely under a 200 snap week prior to a Saturday game day.
And I always felt like game days was my heaviest workload of the week, because you're going through warmups. If there's anything funky going through warmups, you're going to take a couple extra snaps. The punter's not liking his drop, or the kicker's not liking his steps. You're going to get a couple more live reps in. And then every first and second down, I'm having two or three snaps. So in the span of a game, I'm probably right at 100 snaps, including all the warmups, all the reps on the sideline, plus the live reps.
So now you're talking about 300 snaps in 6 days collectively, because you're going to snap in the game and
with three true off days.
Yeah. And you, I think that's why those are, they're so important. And it's weird. You had the same exact schedule I did. I guess most of us do in college level, but even 20 years ago, Tuesday was my heaviest day. And then it started scaling down to almost nothing by Friday, which was nothing besides a walkthrough, maybe just walking the field at my opponent that I had to travel to's field just to check it out. That was my favorite day, is going.
Yeah, that was, Fridays were awesome.
Right? To go to someone's campus and walk around, check it out, and just get a feel for it. Kind of when you start, I don't know, visualizing what you're going to do the next day, I think it's great. But yeah, I really appreciate that answer. I think that it's important to ask stuff like that too, because I want the audience to know that it does not have to be the same as Matt's, but it does have to be that structured. It's got to be personal. It's got to be for you.
If you love scratchers from the Virginia Lottery, you'll really love the new Lucky Number Scratcher. 32 chances to win $500,000 plus 4 bonus games. Stop by your closest retailer and check it out. For odds and more information, visit VALottery.com.
So now we're going to go to an interesting question, okay? I want to tell the audience that you were, in fact, an All-State honorable mention long snapper in high school. But I don't imagine that this was the catalyst that got you to Marshall. You know, in this age of stars and rankings and competitions and expos, many young specialists are not seeing the value in training. What do you credit for your exposure and getting the opportunity to play at the next level and ultimately to be where you are now?
Looking back on it, college football is full of connections. Everyone knows everyone. Coaches know other coaches. Previous players know all their coaches. And now someone played in 2010, that coaching staff's now in all 10 different coaching staffs now. And I think it was a lot of hard work. Definitely felt like the most important thing was going to the actual campus, getting to meet the special teams coach, the quality control coach, and snapping in front of them. If there's anything I would do differently, it would go to more campuses and snap in front of those coaches. And after you snap long enough, they're going to give you your cell phone number. They might not answer you every single day, like every time you text them or a question, but just every week, send them that high school film. It doesn't even have to be off a huddle. It can just be two or three snaps, just so they're obviously going to look at it. And if they're interested in you, they're going to watch the film. You just keep sending them the film. But then you get to meet them on a personal level. If you go spend an afternoon up at Florida with the special teams coordinator there, you do really well, but you don't care for the way he coached you. All right, I don't want to go there. It's a lot different than 5 or 6 Twitter messages back and forth. He offers you a preferred walk on a boom. And then your first day on campus is actually get to know. I think relationships are everything in college football. You have to be comfortable with the people you're going to, but you also have to fall in love with the school. I went through 3 special teams coordinators at Marshall, and every time one of them left, I was like, how in the world is this going to happen? I honestly was like, honestly heartbroken, because Coach Goble was the one that recruited me to Marshall, and so was Coach Cronin. He also coached the punt team. And after my freshman year, Coach Cronin left to go to USF. I was like, there's no way anyone can replace him. Like, he recruited me through high school. He's known me since I was 6 years old. And then after my sophomore year, Coach Goble becomes the co-offensive coordinator, and we bring in a new special teams coach, another coach on staff. It was the linebackers coach. I'm like, oh man, this is going to be really weird. And that was Adam Fuller, who's now the DC at Florida State. And I'm like, Coach Goble was my guy. Like, he was the special teams coordinator. Would talk to him every single day. And now it was Coach Fuller. And then 1 year he leaves for Memphis. And now Mike Trier, who was a young guy, who's now with the Giants on their defensive staff, he was my special teams coordinator for my senior year. And it was just a lot of change in personalities, but it was all good. Every coach that coaches college football is there because they love the players. They want to see the players become great people and also great football coaches. So it's just really cool to get to know those guys on a personal level and also on the football field. And yeah, they're going to coach you really, really hard, but you don't want to play for someone who coaches you say, I probably shouldn't do that. Let's try something else. Like, you want someone that's going to get in your face, going to give it to you. And then an hour later after practice, you sit in the film room and can have a decent conversation with them and say why I did this versus what I should have done. And it's just, relationships are everything in college football.
Couldn't agree more. And then in life too. And I think you can attest to that too. It goes well. Football is just a microcosm of life, because everything that's important in football is also important in life. You know, your teammates, you know, who you choose to surround yourself with. We could go on, but you know, I like what you said. I think it is of the utmost importance for, I'm going to talk to the 2022s right now. These are the current juniors in high school. If you don't have a roadmap this summer planned out, especially in June, Matt knows, because I used to be in Marshall in June helping out with his kicking camps. But June is the camp month, and that's the opportunity where you can spend, I don't know, 50 to 100. I don't know. Everyone's different, but it's significantly less than getting stars and rankings. I think that you need to go in and set a tour, if you will, of like 6-7 schools. Mom or dad, you know, take a couple of days off. This is for my future. And go and meet these coaches, perform in front of these coaches. And guess what? You'll go 6 places. You're not going to have 6 A-plus days, but you're probably going to have 4, because you want to do well. It's important to you. And if you pace yourself correctly, it could probably be more like 5 or 6 days. But regardless, I think what Matt said is so important to just reiterate. Go to the schools, because it's not only about it. You might like their colors. You might like their mascot. You might love their coach. He might not be there next year. Okay. You might hate the cold weather, but you've never felt it because it's on TV. You may not like how isolated. You may love the fact that it's urban. I don't know. There's just so many variables that you have to consider. And the only way you're really going to get a good feel is to experience it. And I love what you said. And I do think it's impossible to go everywhere. So yeah, you also mentioned Twitter relationships. If you're going to have backup plans, at least have a network on Twitter where the coaches can see your training film, that you post often, that it's good, that there is improvement, that there is a structure in place, and you're gonna capture the attention of some of these coaches too. So I can't thank you enough for, again, every response you've had is exactly what I want these guys to hear. I want to talk about free agency real quick. We've talked about it once in the show before, but I think it's important to hear a different opinion. Many of our fourth down athletes are currently in your position. I've only had one other free agent on, but you're my second now that I know and I train with. It appears that it's a unique situation for each of you. You know, each of you guys that I talked to on the side have told me different things, but one thing that seems to be universally agreed on is there is certainly an uncertainty about it. You know, like, we don't know what tomorrow brings type thing. So could you explain in a few words the life of a free agent long snapper, what that means to you, what it is to you, what are you going through? Perhaps, you know, the identification of an agent, training and recovery, networking, like you mentioned prior. What are the essentials for you, and what's your learning that is important as a free agent, and maybe the ups and the downs?
So I've only been a free agent through a COVID year with the NFL. Everything was different in the NFL than it was a year ago. The whole tryout process, mini camps, everything's different. And the only thing that I can really explain that I've figured out through it is just control what I can control. That's literally, I know it's the most cliche thing, but I can't control the only thing I control is working out, snapping, running, and eating right and keeping my body healthy. Like, I got to be ready to go when a coach calls. It's not a moment's notice anymore because you have to go quarantine for 6 days before you can even do anything. But it's just really just staying true to myself, still working hard, and it's just not letting the dream die out, because it was a tough year for rookies. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I know it was less than 5 rookie snappers that got to play or were on a practice squad this year. I know there was multiple guys that have been out of the league for 1 or 2 years, got a chance to play in games because they've been there. They've done it. Coaches weren't taking chances on rookies this year like they would in the past, where they're always looking for someone that's younger, cheaper, and better. But it was just a super weird year. Definitely, I wouldn't say discouraging, but it was just really hard mentally more than anything, because it was my first year in 9 years that I haven't had a full football season. It was just super weird when Marshall was kicking off that first game of the season back at the end of August. I'm like, this is weird. And then you turn on the NFL and it's like, you watch a snap. I'm like, I can do that. I can do that better. And it's just really tough. Hopefully things get back to normal soon. And people can complain about COVID, this and that, but it's one of those things where we're living in it. We just got to deal with it. I can't blame me not playing in the NFL on COVID, 100%. I just can't do that. It's not who I am. I don't want to sound like have an excuse for it, but it is what it is, and just got to keep grinding.
It's been tough for so many of us, you know, in different ways. But I like what you said. It's like, I think that if we can just remind ourselves that there are 8 billion people-ish, and all of those 8 billion people, 100% of them have been affected. You know, they've had to redirect the way they do things and find ways to do it. And, you know, if they want to keep things sustainable, like business. But I like your attitude. I think you've accepted the fact that you're not a victim. If you want to look at it that way, we're all victims, but we all need to just bounce back. So I've always liked you for that reason. And I think that that is one of the most important components to success, is realizing that we're going to fail and bad things are going to happen to us. We're not going to be rewarded because we're hard workers all the time, because if that was the case, yeah, you would never have downtimes. You've earned that, right? But I have one final question for you, Matt. Your junior year, I think it was, at Marshall, you won the Gasparilla Bowl, okay? And you beat USF, the Bulls. In that game, you faced another young man I think very highly of, your younger brother, who is Andrew Beardall. He's a long snapper for the Bulls. We've been training together through you. You know, you brought him up when he was or became interested. And, you know, I admire your relationship with him. You know, I mentioned previously your family too. You guys are amazing people. And it's just been a pleasure to be in your lives for the last almost decade. I'd like to know, though, if Andrew was in fact listening to this show, or if he tunes in on a later date, what advice would you give him as a player who's in the middle of his career?
So he's in a pretty unique situation. His first 2 years he was there, redshirted, didn't play for 2 years, got a new coaching staff, brought whole new staff, came in, new special teams coordinator, and he was super, super jacked. Super jacked about the new staff, loved every single bit of it, kind of changed the culture in the best way possible at USF. And then snapping really good, starting to take some one reps, boom, tears his ACL first scrimmage. Just the biggest slap in the face ever. He worked his tail off through summer conditioning, stayed healthy all summer long, avoided getting COVID. I would put him out for 2 weeks, and just tears his ACL. It was the most heartbreaking thing ever. It was like, it's the same. It's why do bad things happen to good people? And I just think we're all here. We all have a plan, and it's just, he just has to stay the course. Like, it's never a straight line. If it's a straight line, it would be the easiest thing in the world. And obviously his road's taking a couple left turns, a couple hard right turns. And he just needs to stay focused, keep getting better every day, keep getting healthy. I think it's definitely not going to be easy coming back from an ACL, but the best athletes in the world do it every single year. And he just has to keep working hard and he'll be fine.
I think that's definitely what I would say if I had to say it to someone. I think it's a tough question. I wanted to ask you, though, because I think it's an important question, because You know, I think a lot of people out there go through things. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people out there, again, the victim syndrome, I guess you could call it. It's not the way to go, because no one really cares in the end. If you continuously just complain, less and less people are going to be there to help you solve the problem, because you're telling the person right away that you're not really, your intention isn't to solve it. It's to find out why you got the bad hand, you know? So I thank you for that. I think it's so important to realize that we're not going to go in a straight line. It's not going to be linear. It's not going to go up each day. There's going to be pitfalls for sure. So I want to thank you again for joining. And I want to also ask what I always do. I would like you to share with the audience, maybe how they can follow your progress on social media, if you will.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'll put videos out every now and then of different trainings and stuff. My Twitter's @BeardallMatt, or Instagram's @BeardAll89. And if any questions or anything, you can always, Coach Lundy has my number. You can give it to him, and just always open, love helping guys and love growing the sport of specialists. I think even from when I was being recruited my senior year, 5 years ago, how much has changed since then? And it's just going to keep evolving. And it's just really, really good for the sport. Teams aren't having one guy on the roster anymore. And it's most of them 2 or 3 and super competitive. And every year teams are looking to get better, and coaches will sit down and meet all off season and say, how can we get better? They'll break down every position. And it's like, let's bring another snapper in. I think we're an A. Let's go be an A+ next year. Let's bring a guy in that can be an A+. And I also think one of the things is the transfer portal's not always the thing if you're not happy with your situation. Certainly there's instances where, yes, you probably should leave schools or whatever, but I think you got to do a good enough job in the recruiting process and figure out, all right, if I'm still unhappy, is the pastures always green on the other side? Most times it's not. You just think kids have it all. And I just think you got to be able to stick it out and just work hard and keep getting better. And the coaches will always play the best player.
I think that's a great point. I've never brought that up on the show, but I do think with the increase in transfers, and it's prevalent, it's everywhere. It's often, it's almost expected. Everyone does it once. I think it is because there's negligence in the thought before it all went down. Like when I'm a senior in high school, I should be really considering every variable, like we mentioned on the show, because I think some people are just very careless and think, oh, I'm just going to go there and play football and have fun and get treated like a king and I'm going to get along with everybody. But there's so many things that come into play when you're talking about a life decision, like going to college and getting a degree. But I want to thank you again. And Matt means it. He will respond to you if you want to send him a clip. And if you know a long snapper, because a lot of people on this show are not long snappers, but if you know a guy, he's very good with the young guys. He really wants to help. He wants to see a bunch of good little long snappers out there, because it's coming up, but we're in need. It's a very important position too, because if you one errant snap is a loss 8 out of 10 times at any level. This means a lot to me and a lot to everyone at Fourth Down Focus that you were able to share a little bit about your story. If you have questions related to Fourth Down Focus, suggestions for future topics or guests, or if you have comments or feedback for the show, you can reach me, Dan Lundy, several ways. My website, fourthdownu.com, has endless resources for specialists and specialist coaches. On social media, you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter @fourthdownu. That's @4THDOWNU. And on Facebook and LinkedIn, I'm @Dan_Lundy, LUNDY. Thanks again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus. We'll see you again next week with an exciting new guest. I hope 2021 is treating each of you well. And remember, in all things, give thanks.